It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on The Fan, 101.9 FM.
My job is to try to get us to a championship. That's all I care about. Because remember, when they fired Tibbs, what they said in their PR statement that they put out, and that was, we're all about championships, and I'm paraphrasing. We want to win a championship, and the reason we essentially fired the coach is we don't think he can get us there.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Get the scuttlebutt on your favorite team, The Fan, on the Odyssey, iHeart, and TuneIn apps.
Call his wife and hey, 404. How's your boy been?
McMonagle here with you. I got you for one more hour as we take you till 5 o'clock in the warm up show. 888 808 1019. Talking a lot about our two miserable baseball teams. At least they were last night. The Mets have now lost five in a row. Clay Holmes in it. As he did it, give up a couple runs early on, wild hitting batters. And that Met team, once they fall behind, and I know the pitching has been bad, they give up a ton of runs. The bullpen came in and got beat up again. They lose 11-3 last night. And it just feels like, and I know the pitching's bad, and I know when you think about this team, who is now, amazingly enough, it's hard to fathom. They are two games out. Cincinnati Reds won yesterday. They are two games ahead of both the Reds and the Giants. The difference is the Reds are the team that they have lost the season series against. So if the Reds catch them and tie them, they will be the team in the postseason. The Mets will be the ones with their face pressed up against the glass looking in. Amazingly enough, that's where we are as we sit here on this Thursday morning. But as bad as that rotation's been, and as bad as Manaea was yesterday or 2 days ago now, as bad as Clay Holmes was last night, as frustrating as it's been, and you try and think about, even if they make the playoffs, what does this rotation look like and who should be in it? And should Clay Holmes go to the bullpen and everything else that's been in the flux that has been the Mets rotation? This offense continues. I'm sorry. That's the problem. Because they're supposed to be what carries you, and for a while they were in August, but it has gone ice cold again, and you can just feel it the minute they fall behind. And I know their starting pitching has put them behind, and it's not easy necessarily, but they're the one team in Major League Baseball that has not won a game when trailing after the eighth inning. The one team. And you can just feel it. And what sucks about that and the feel of this series is that heading into it, although the division was probably lost heading into the series, it's not about that necessarily, as they've just absolutely gotten annihilated here by Philadelphia, and clearly the division's long, long over. But it's that they've played well against Philadelphia. All the talk with the Yankees, and we'll get to them in their miserable bullpen over the last 2 days, and Aaron Judge and his struggles, and Volpe not in the lineup, and we've done that all morning long at 888-808-1019. For all the talk about playing good teams and sending a message, and they need to prove that they could beat these teams, the Astros and the Blue Jays, and now the Tigers, who they apparently can't beat, so hopefully they don't see them in the postseason, because that would be over. And, you know, all of the talk around the Yankees and that, the thing about the Mets have been they have played well against Philadelphia, and not just this season, going back seasons into the playoffs last year, taking them down in four in the NLDS last year and sweeping them the last time they saw them and beating them up this regular season. There has been a dynamic of, sure, when they see the Braves, they struggle, but when they see the Phillies, they have played well. And the Phillies feel it. The Phillies are the ones complaining about glares off microphones out in the distance. They're the ones who don't know how to beat the Mets. And during these three games, and hopefully it ends last night and begins anew today, they have absolutely owned the Mets, and they have done it in convincing fashion. And that tide has completely changed. And the Phillies absolutely are comfortable playing the Mets and have dominated the series and have pounded the starting pitching and pounded the bullpen and completely shut down this lineup that kind of came in, you know, maybe off a couple of cold games in Cincinnati, but as an offense that was kind of killing it for a month. Best batting average of runners in scoring position for in all of Major League Baseball. And they have gone ice cold, and, you know, the manager was calling for fight, and he got everything but in this game. There was no fight from the offense. There was no pushback from this rotation. The bullpen came in and just let a bad outing turn worse. And this Met team right now is just in free fall. Five losses in a row, including the last two to Cincinnati, which set up the idea that now they are literally two games away from being outside of the postseason looking in. And again, I don't want to project what happens if that happens, because I still think that this team is just too damn good to allow that to happen. I just still think this roster is too damn good to allow that to happen. But if it does, what needs to change with this team? How does this group come back? Like, I just, it would be a disaster of epic proportions. They cannot allow that to happen. This manager, this team, Juan Soto, Francisco Lindor, or anybody else who calls themselves a leader on this team cannot allow the next 3 weeks to end without making it to the postseason. It just can't happen. And then you get to the Yankees with their bullpen and the real problem. Yes, their offense has gone cold too. And they lose these two games in ugly fashion, tight, close games, 2-2 in the seventh in game number one. The bullpen gives up 10 runs. 2-0 in games in the seventh inning of this game. And the bullpen comes in and gives up 9 runs. I mean, and we have the nerve and the audacity as Yankee fans to blame Aaron Boone when every person who answered the phone in that bullpen came out and gave up bombs. Like, it's laughable to get on Boone. And that's really the problem with this team, because we know they don't hit in the postseason, and that's been their issue over the last handful of years. More so than even fundamentals and accountability and analytics. It's been the offense, without question. And even though the offense has gone cold and we did a whole thing on Judge, he's not playing well enough. There's no doubt about it. But even having said that, this lineup has been really good all year. They've been the best offense in the American League. They up and down the lineup, they have guys who are having really good seasons, surprise seasons, career seasons. Like, the offense is good. Now, they've gone cold the last couple of days, and I'll just never know if they'll hit in the postseason. That's always going to be a fear. But I believe they have good players and are capable of being a dominant force. This bullpen, I mean, I don't know who you trust. You got Bednar as your closer, and you feel pretty good about him. Fernando Cruz is part of this bullpen over the last two nights, who just completely imploded, but he's been so clutch and so big and big strikeouts, and his split finger is one of the best swing and miss pitches in the league, and he's been really great outside of the other night since he's come back from injury. You kind of trust him. Weaver was your closer last year in the World Series. He's had an up and down year, but you still kind of have faith in him a little bit. Outside of that, it is tough to have a bullpen where you feel like you can't throw anybody but three guys in any kind of close situation. Doval comes in last night. He's terrible. Leiter, back-to-back nights, can't get out. Can't get outs. Even Tim Hill, who everybody loves, comes in and throws gasoline on the fire last night and has given up home runs to left-handed hitters. Right now, the Yankees have to figure out the bullpen. The problem isn't that they're losing to the Tigers, and they can't beat the Tigers. They're better than the Tigers. I still believe that. Their starting pitching is better. Their bullpen is better. Their starting pitching is better. Their lineup is better. But right now, this Yankee team has a real problem. And quite honestly, we can yell and scream. And I know these games are important. And this is my feeling towards the Yankee bullpen. I know these games are important. I know you want to win the division. Last night, the Blue Jays lost, thankfully. It's going to be very difficult to win this division, down essentially 4 games, considering they've lost the tiebreaker. That's a tough road to hoe, only with 18 left to play or 17 left to play, whatever it is. That's not going to be easy, no doubt. It's still on the table, but it won't be easy. And as much as you're trying to hold on to the first wild card and have home field advantage in the wild card series, very important if you want to go win a World Series, without question. But the most important thing, more important than any of that, is that they are set up to play well in the postseason. And for me, as important as these games are, when you have three arms you can trust, you can't go to these guys when you're only down a run to keep it close. You can't. I can't pitch two of those guys in a losing effort. I can't pitch these guys to keep a game close. In the postseason, I'm going to have to do that because I have nobody else. The Yankees and Aaron Boone have to be very careful. They want to win these games. They want to go win the division. It better be the strength of this team, which is the starting rotation and the offense, because the bullpen is down to three arms you trust, and I can't just throw them in every situation that's close. I'm going to need those three guys to save victories, and I need them fresh heading into the postseason because I'm going to need them to pitch in all these situations that I don't want to pitch them in now, because God knows when I can throw Devin Williams, when I can throw Duvall, when I can throw Leiter, when I can throw Hill, when I can throw anybody else in the bullpen outside of Bednar, Weaver, and Cruz. So, like, it's going to be tough, but they better head into the postseason with a fresh back end of the bullpen, because I can't overuse them down this stretch. No matter how much I want to win these games, no matter how much I want to win this division, no matter how much I want home field advantage in the wild card series, I can't. I got to get to a position heading into the postseason where those guys haven't been drained over the last 3 weeks just to get there. But they've lost two or three. They get a big game today. You do not want to get swept. But ultimately, it's about getting straight for the postseason. And they've got to figure out this bullpen, because the postseason's coming for the New York Yankees. They're up five games. They're the first wild card. They're going to the playoffs. The Mets are clinging for dear life, trying to figure out how to get in. The Yankees are in. And as much as I want to do more than just get in, the most important thing is that they're set up for success when they get there. And that means, I know many of you are angry, it means not pitching some of the back-end arms that you have faith in just to keep a two-run deficit, a two-run deficit. Can't do it. Can't do it. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Eric in Ronkonkoma. What's up, Eric?
Well, hold on, C-Mac. How are you?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Good. Before I get to the message, you mentioned that nightclub under the hotel.
Yes, under the Garden City Hotel.
I haven't heard that brought up in a while, and it's funny because everybody used to go to the Garden City Bowling Alley afterwards because at the time it was open 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
So that brought back an interesting memory.
Yeah, I mean, that was back in my early 20s. We used to go to that club at the bottom of the Garden City Hotel, and that's when that song, "Oh right. Yeah," by Usher was like the biggest thing in the world.
You touched on it, you know, as far as the Mets. I mean, how do you... It's so bizarre, and depressing is not the right word, but disappointing, I guess, to go from last year when the Mets never seemed like they were out of a game,
yep,
to being completely out of it. You know, I mean, like, after the first couple innings, I'm like, the game's over.
It does feel that way. It feels like minute that, and it shouldn't. And as bad as the starting's been, and as much of a, Manaea gave up four runs the other day before you touched, you know, pretty much before the game gets started. It's 2-0 Phils last night. I get that, but it shouldn't feel like the offense has no chance of overcoming those. 4-0 in the second inning should not be a massive hole you can't get out of.
But that's
how it feels.
No doubt. And it's such a pendulum swing. It's like, you know, this is why it's frustrating, you know, and as far as the Mets' success with getting into the postseason, you know, it's only been a handful of times. And I said the other day when I called, I said, you know, if they're not careful by this time next week, they could be out of a playoff spot.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really on the precipice Right now, it's scary.
And then you have to ask questions. Like you said, they don't make the playoffs a lot. They haven't done back-to-back playoff runs in many times in their history. 15, 16, 99, 2000. Like, there's not a lot.
I don't even count 16. I get it. But, I mean, that's essentially like tying at the end of the season and having to play that one-game playoff anyway. I mean, it was one game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sorry. To me, that doesn't count. You know, I need an actual series for me to count it as a playoff. Mm-hmm. That's just me. I mean, I know technically they made it.
I understand what you're saying, but I don't look at it that way. Yeah.
But, you know, but, uh, But yeah, I mean, it's literally only been a handful of times, and you know, it's a shame that the teams in the '80s were, you know, were the team that really would have gone on 3-4, you know, year run in the playoffs, but it wasn't structured that way back then.
Right. No, I get it. And Eric, you have to wonder about the core of this team. I remember Mike. I don't know if it was after 07 or 08 or 09. I forget which year it was. But talking about the idea of breaking up the core of Reyes and Wright and that team because it had hit its limits. And, like, I don't know what the options are other than allow Pete Alonso to leave. And I know a lot of Met fans, especially Joe Beningo, as I hear every Saturday morning before me, I know you don't want to necessarily lose Pete Alonso here, and I get it. But, again, and was it Gio this morning who said it? I saw some of the website put it out this morning. I think it was Gio talking about this. He's not wrong. I don't know the right answer. I don't. But you have to at least consider it. You have to think about it. Because last year was the exception. Last year was the one time where they really played well for a long stretch and headed into the postseason playing well and performed. Like, that's it. Like, you look at this group. They had the 101-win season under Buck Showalter, completely faded down the stretch, allowed the Braves to win the division, and then, you know, Max Scherzer didn't give them much help, but, you know, kind of no-showed in the series against the Padres. Then they had a miserable year, sold at the deadline, traded everybody away, traded Scherzer, traded Verlander, traded David Robertson, traded everybody. And did a great job doing it, you know, did this, the power, the superpower that is that David Stearns has, Steve Cohen has, where he's able to trade prospects for and money for better trade pitching and money for better prospects, eating up contracts for better prospects. Great, did a great job. But then you got last year as the one outlier of this group, and especially offensively. So, I mean, as much as I think Pete Alonso deserves to be back, and as much as I think Pete Alonso has been good for this team, and as much as I hate to lose your guy, at what point, if this thing collapses, which I still don't think it will, but if it does, you do have to consider looking at the core of this team. Like, you have to, and Stearns has no loyalty to any of these guys. Stearns, I know he signed Pete Alonso to this contract, but Pete Alonso's not his guy. McNeil's not his guy. Nimmo's not his guy. Vientos is not his guy. Beatty's not his guy. Mauricio's not his guy. Like, it's just been, this would be an epic fail. There's no doubt it would be a failure of epic proportion that would justify a look deep inside the team into how they need to move forward. It just would. It doesn't mean that they can't bring those guys back, but you'd have to really look at what the options are around Major League Baseball. Brett in Long Island. What's up, Brett?
I'm not arguing with Fleet. I just don't think it's logical if the Jets make the playoffs that he absolutely won't root for them if Woody Johnson's the owner. That's all, if you're a diehard fan.
I hear you.
Daniel Jones.
Yes.
You know, there's three things that you're embarrassing yourself on. One, they're saying that he should be happy that he got a contract and thank you for all they've done. Mm-hmm. They cut him 2 years. They lost $80 million. So stop with that. Don't say that anymore.
They made him a lot of money. He got a contract for a significant
money. He deserved it. We already agreed he deserved it at the Viking game, and he got it.
Brian Dable's part of the reason he got it. Like, he should thank Brian Dable for that contract.
But he earned it.
Brian Dable.
Game that they hadn't done. Okay, yeah. And then you're saying he just got $14 million. So
no, it wasn't 14. He got the, he second, paid. He played for $40 million. He played the whole year. $40 million.
I'm talking about the Colts right now. His new contract. They got
The contract he signed with the Giants. The contract he signed with the Giants. He should thank him for.
Second thing was that you said, this is your facts, you said the Dana Zone sucks, we needed to move on from it, we did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we're not going to talk about him anymore, thank God. Okay, what do you do? I caught you last week, we talked, you said, I don't know if you saw the game, I watched almost the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
You watched, when's the last time you watched a almost an entire game of the Cubs offense. Why'd you watch it? You watched it because of Daniel Jones, didn't you, Chris?
No, yeah, I did it because the biggest bet I had on the biggest bet I had all week was the Dolphins. That's why I watched it.
So you watched the Dolphins? Okay.
I watched the game because I bet the Dolphins, yes. That was my biggest bet of the week. It was my biggest pick of the week.
Okay.
I'm in a stupid survivor pick where I'm in two separate pools. I mean, not really, no, a little bit about Daniel Jones, but I bet against Daniel Jones. I'm open to
watch the whole Dolphin Patriot game this week too. Yeah.
Well, I didn't bet. I don't know if I'm going to bet it the same. It's week one. I don't have a lot of big bets because I don't have a great feel of the league just yet. It's week one. I've talked about this on the picks. I picked it. I'm in two survivor pools where one is against the spread. Miami was my survivor pool pick. I'm out of that pool already after the Miami Dolphins. I thought they were going to go in there and score a bunch of points.
I get it. Mm-hmm. You can follow the game, Chris. You said you watched almost the game. That's what
I did. I watched a lot of that. I
did it because of this. Right, because of Daniel Jones. I mean, you know,
had nothing to do with Daniel Jones.
Fine, whatever. Fine, tell yourself that. The next thing is that you're saying, the next thing is you say, oh, you're giving credit to Daboll again for being a quarterback. You went from whisperer to assisting to today you said transitioning Josh Allen. You're saying all that. Meanwhile, a guy that you said sucked that they got rid of, he won a playoff game that I've been arguing for the past 5 years, and you're like, oh, it's one game. Mm-hmm. One game. Right? Mm-hmm. So now you're using it to defend Abel. Like, and then the next thing is like, DeVito was the fourth quarterback here, and they got rid of him, and he's a backup. And you're saying they had no film on him, Chris. Come on.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know.
It's
everything.
It's
everything but the coach. It's everything but the coach. One game, a road playoff game. Daniel Jones the biggest turnover in the NFL? Was Daniel Jones the most turn from fumbles and interceptions? Did anybody else in the NFL before Brian Daboll got there? Did anybody else in the NFL turn the ball over more than Daniel Jones?
I want to help you with this, Brad.
I want to help you with this. Answer the question.
Go ahead, help me.
I'm helping you. Did he turn the ball over more than everybody else?
He had a turnover problem.
Yeah. Okay. So yes, he was the most turned over player in the NFL. I ask you a question, you say yes. Or you say no. Was he correct? Okay. At the end of the season, after Brian Daboll pretty much taught him to look for his first read and then tuck it and run and hand the ball off to Saquon Barkley and stop turning the ball over, when they won all those games, thanks to Saquon Barkley, and then got into the postseason, was he the least turned over quarterback in the NFL? He went from the least turned over quarterback in the NFL, the most turned over quarterback in the NFL, to the least turned over quarterback in the NFL. Then he took him to a playoff game, and he won that playoff game. Right? And he played great in that playoff game. I'll never take it away from him. Daniel Jones played great. You don't think Brian Daboll had anything to do with that? And yes, it's one game. One game. And then Daniel Jones reverted back. And I can blame the coach for it. I can blame the coach for him turning back into a pumpkin the next year and getting hurt and everything else. Sure, we'll blame the coach. I'm fine with that. What I'm telling you is Daniel Jones didn't win a damn thing and turn the ball over every time the wind blew for the 2 years prior to Brian Daboll getting there. Then he stopped turning the ball over. The Giants won 9 games, went into the playoffs, and won a playoff game. And then Daniel Jones got a big-ass contract. So, yes, they decided to move on from him. They cut him early. They didn't let him get the back end of that contract. He went out and signed another team and played well in week one. If you think he should be bitter about Brian Daboll, should he be bitter about the New York Giants franchise? Sure. He was a young, promising prospect. They drafted him. And then they changed coaches on him. They couldn't give him an offensive line. I have no problem with Daniel Jones feeling like the Giants didn't do him any favors. Brian Daboll, on the other hand, Brian Daboll came in, taught him how to not turn the ball over, got him to a playoff game, helped him win a playoff game, and then got him a massive contract. So yes, I do think Daniel Jones should be more have a positive view of Brian Daboll, then he should have a negative view of Brian Daboll.
Brian Daboll is about to be out the door, Chris. Maybe. What are you talking about? He's about to lose his job. You're sitting here telling me how he did a better. Oh, he got the turnovers. Chris, he regressed. Everybody was screaming from the mountaintops. The quarterback's terrible. You can't have it both ways. You're trying right now to have it both ways.
I'm not trying to have it both ways.
With the turnovers.
This is the way.
And then you're trying
the quarterback
to say, okay,
is terrible.
Worse. What is
and
it?
The quarterback is terrible, and for one magical year, somehow Brian Daboll transformed him into a winning quarterback.
Yeah, quarterback
and then the powers wore off the year after. That's my point.
Right?
Was that?
He's not terrible on the Colts, is he?
Yes, he will be. It's one game against the lousy Dolphins. It's one game. He played great for one game against Minnesota. I'm willing to give you that. I never said Daniel Jones will never play a good game ever again. I never said that. He's not a winning quarterback. He's not taking the Colts to the playoffs. He's not a winning quarterback. He can have the odd game here or there. I don't believe him to be a winning quarterback. I don't believe him to be suddenly discovered in Indianapolis. Maybe he will be, and I'll be wrong. You can't say that over 1 week. And again, the reason I say I watched the game had nothing to do with Daniel Jones other than I bet against him. And I thought Miami was going to be able to score points, and I thought the biggest issue Miami has, which clearly it is the defensive backfield, and I didn't think Daniel Jones could take advantage of it week one. And he did. Good for him. I wish him the best. Despite the idea that I'll get yelled at from you every day, I truly do wish him the best. Because he's a tough son of a gun, and he gave the Giants everything he had. Everything he had. He played through knee injuries. He played through a neck injury that there was speculation could end his career. And he still attacked. And he still ran. And he still ran through contact. He is a tough son of a gun who did everything he could in his power to help the New York Giants win. His powers just aren't very prowess. I don't think that's the right word. His powers just aren't very powerful. I have a gift for the English language. I'm just telling you, that's how I feel. If you watch that game, the Dolphins have quit on their coach. They've quit on their coach. Their defensive backfield's terrible. And Daniel Jones completed 22 of 29 passes. He completed 22 passes for 272 yards. He threw one touchdown pass and ran two others. He got a bunch of field goals as well. Congrats. The idea that he is somehow transformed into this great quarterback because week one he beat the worst team in the NFL, we will see. And again, the idea we haven't seen it. Week two against the Cardinals, do we remember that? After the 40-0 blowout that the Cowboys put on the Giants. And I'll even give you this. Daniel Jones had no chance in that game. That's one of those games that the offensive line gave Daniel Jones zero chance against the Cowboys. They get blown out 40-0. Not Daniel Jones' fault at all. And then week two against the Arizona Cardinals, partially Daniel Jones' fault, they fall behind big at the half. And we were just like, oh, the season's over already. Off the promising playoff year, they got blown out 40-0, and they can't beat the lousy Cardinals. I think the quarterback was hurt at the time. I forget who the backup was. But it wasn't Murray. I think he was dealing with the knee injury. They were terrible. And they were getting blown out at the half. And then Daniel Jones played as perfect as Josh Dobbs played. Right, exactly. And then Daniel Jones and Josh Dobbs surprised everybody. And he was probably the talk of all 11 social media groups Brett's involved in. And then Daniel Jones in the second half of that game was damn near perfect. Perfect. He slung the ball all over the place and led a second-half comeback and won that football game. I have never said that Daniel Jones is void of any talent. I have never said Daniel Jones is not capable of having a good game. I have never said Daniel Jones shouldn't get another chance to be a starting quarterback somewhere. Daniel Jones isn't consistently good. Daniel Jones isn't the kind of quarterback that leads you anywhere of significance. He might win you the odd game. He might be a quarter. He might be. You put him in the perfect situation with a real talented team and a good head coach. He might be able to give you a quarterback managing type job and lead you to 9-10 wins. It's not the craziest thing I've ever seen. He ain't winning anything. That's all I've ever said. He's not winning anything, and he wasn't good enough to play behind that offensive line with this Giant team anymore. And more than I needed the terrible quarterback of Daniel Jones gone, I just needed Daniel Jones gone to end it. Because I couldn't continue with, is it him? Is it the offensive line? What about next year? Like, I was done with continuing the debate of Daniel Jones. And yet here I am at 4:33 in the morning, continuing the debate of Daniel Jones. I don't care. He's not here. I think the Giants are better off for it, and hopefully maybe the Colts are. And maybe he is. Great. Great. But the idea he has somehow turned around his career because he went and threw against the Dolphins, who literally have the worst defensive backfield in the sport. I'm not there.
It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
My job is to try to get us to a championship. That's all I care about. Because remember, when they fired Tibbs, what they said in their PR statement that they put out, and that was, we're all about championships, and I'm paraphrasing. We want to win a championship, and the reason we essentially fired the coach is we don't think he can get us there.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Just yet. But I wish him well.
Have something to say? Dial us 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Count on Sundays all season long with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus.
All right, Chris McMonagle here with you. I got you for another 20 minutes or so as we take you to 5 a.m. and the warm-up show, 888-808-1019 on this Thursday morning. The 24th anniversary of 9/11 on this September 11th morning, 24 years ago already. It is amazing. And it's become something that marks the time. It's become something, you know, for those of us who were there for that day, it's a, you know, a landmark moment in your life. And it's just one of those things. Every year it comes, obviously, a sad day, a day of remembrance for all the tragic loss of life and all the heroes that went into those buildings that day and everything that followed and the city coming together. President Trump is going to be at the Yankee game tonight. If you are going to the Yankee game, they suggest you get there early, obviously, because of the added security of the president being at the game. But 24 years ago already, the day that changed everything for this country and this city was, my first year of college. I remember I overslept that day and missed a math class, which I was, ended up becoming a trend for me. But I remember sleeping in that day and my mother calling me in a panic and turning on the television and just disbelief of what we were watching. So 24 years ago today, it's amazing. And it's when I've said a couple times, if you were around for it, to think, because my wife's a teacher and she teaches high school students, and you know, like, she'll come home and talk, and obviously I have kids and young kids, and like, to just think that this is for so many, for a generation now. I mean, we're going on a quarter century. Next year will be a quarter century. The idea that it's just something in a history book for so many is so, it's such a bizarre thing to think that there are full adults now living their life, having jobs.
We have people who work here.
People who work here who have no, I mean, not even, and obviously you have to be over 30 to kind of remember it even. I mean, something like right around, I guess maybe a little, 28. But I mean, there are people who work here weren't born for it yet. Who aren't, I mean, it's crazy to think it's been almost a quarter century since that day. And obviously, yesterday, more gun violence in this country. As you know, Charlie Kirk, a prominent political figure in this country, was shot and killed tragically in another school shooting. It's just, we try and do what we do to talk sports, and as angry as we get, and as, you know, much as we'll argue about, you know, Daniel Jones or bullpens and starting rotations and offensive line, it is days like yesterday and obviously 9/11 that remind you that this is the toy department for a reason, and we call it that for a reason, and we try and we do what we do here, but sometimes life just makes it very difficult. But we'll get back to it today, obviously, the 24th anniversary of September 11th, so we'll watch the names be read as we always do every year and try and remember everybody who is critical to saving lives that day and building the city back up after that tragedy.
It's Boomer and Geo, mornings on The Fan, 101.9 FM.
My job is to try to get us to a championship. That's all I care about. Because remember, when they fired Tibbs, what they said in their PR statement that they put out, and that was, we're all about championships, and I'm paraphrasing. We want to win a championship, and the reason we essentially fired the coach is we don't think he can get us there.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Your friends pretend they know sports. WFAN actually does. Get smarter, louder, and way more annoying at watch parties. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always streaming on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps.
All right. Back here on The Fan, McMonagle here with you, also streaming on YouTube. Go to the overnight. Me and Keith stream live on YouTube every single night, obviously on the Odyssey app as well. And of course, here, 6:60 a.m. and 101.9 FM right here on The Fan. And let me just tell you about something important. September is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. Men, please go get screened. It's a simple blood test, and when detected early, the survival rate of nearly all cases increased to 99%. The Yankees, Montefiore, and fans for the cure will have a free screening at Yankee Stadium before and during the game on September 25th. Everyone who gets screened gets a voucher for two tickets to a game in 2026. So next year, you go to the game on September 25th, you get screened, and you will get a voucher for two games for next season. For more information, visit fansforthecure.org. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Richie in Queens. What's up, Richie?
Very somber day, Chris.
Drove in. Always is.
Drove in that day 24 years ago. There was all kinds of debris in the air, papers. And I remember one Wolf saying to Imus in the morning, I think a small plane hit the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
And when I parked, I went to park the car. I saw the second plane hit the tower, left the car. My brother worked there. He lost 64 people. Thank God he was late that day.
Yeah.
He was never late. And, you know, I was walking through and went to the World Trade Center and the South Tower when it came down. Mm-hmm. I was with my secretary, and we were running through the streets. And that day was just incredible. And we had played in the Financial Softball League, and we had played Cantor Fitzgerald about 2 weeks prior. And all the guys that were in their 30s were all killed except one that was on vacation. And the thing that I remember is that we came back like in January. I drove the car to the Battery Garage, and I don't know if you're familiar with that, and all the cars were still there covered with debris. And my thought was, well, these people went to work this day and they never came home. Yeah. So it's a day that obviously we never want to forget. And I know it's something that sometimes the kids, you know, you're out of sight, out of mind, but you put it very eloquently, but it's a day that still very, very,
of
very
course.
With
I,
me.
I remember. You remember? I thankfully, you know, I was going to community college out in Nassau County, so I wasn't anywhere in the city. And amazingly and thankfully, I really didn't know anyone personally. Who I didn't really know anyone that lost their lives. I feel very lucky for that. And my father and a few family members, my aunts and an uncle, all worked in the city. And I remember the panic of that day. I remember how beautiful and perfect that day was weather-wise, too. I mean, everyone talks about it, but that day really was. It was just, there wasn't a cloud in the sky. It was a perfect September morning. And it was,
you know, yeah, it was good. And I was supposed to be off that day, you know, and my boss said, you have to come in. I was supposed to play golf that day. And I had met a fellow with my brother that Friday. And I'll never forget him. He was 32 years old and he was trying to help, and he was killed by debris that morning. So it was just something that, and when we left that day and we left the city, and my car was covered with almost 10 inches of soot from the debris from the building coming down.
Right.
And I remember people just walking aimlessly uptown, and they were just trying to get out, and we had to walk all the way up to Pleasure Street because the traffic was stopped. And it's a day and my wife had no idea that I had gone to work. She didn't know where I was. Obviously, the cell phones were down, couldn't get contact.
Yep.
It's just, it's something, it's a very, very tragic day, and you brought up what happened yesterday, and it just never ends. So, you know, sports sometimes is our outlet,
right?
But sometimes it just can't get away from the thought of what happened on this particular day.
No,
so,
absolutely.
Thanks, Chris.
Of
appreciate
course,
it.
Richie. Thank you for the call. Yeah, no, there's no avoiding it, but this is, an outlet, and obviously, sports and the Mike Piazza home run and the Yankees' run to the World Series was such a huge part of bringing normalcy back for us and for the country. So, I mean, what we do here plays a role. There's no doubt about it. But, yeah, that day, it's amazing. It's 24 years ago. It's, obviously you remember it like it was yesterday, everything about that day and how all of our lives changed. And you're right, like, we all thought it was just some sort of accident. And then the second plane, you recognized, well, this isn't an accident. Let's go to Demetrius in Woodbury. What's up, Demetrius? How are you?
What's up, Chris? How you doing?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Doing all right. Yeah, it's, today, time flies in 24 years.
I know.
2 weeks after the towers went down, I was on a plane going to Chicago, going to boot camp. I enlisted before the towers went down.
That's incredible. Thank you for your service.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it. It was a big moment in my family's life because I enlisted before I went, and I followed through. I had the opportunity to back out, but I didn't. I still went and served. But my thoughts and prayers to the families of the first responders and the people who actually lost their lives in that tower. And, not only in D.C. and Pennsylvania, but switching gears real quick. Talk about Boom.
Yeah.
Chris, can you please? It's embarrassing to watch. I don't know. How much more, as a fan, can I take this? To sit there and take Boone allowing this bullpen to implode? Like, did you not see what we see?
I guess I'm not. I don't know. If you saw anything other than every arm he called for being awful, I really don't know what you expect him to do.
Luckily, Boston and Houston lost. So, we didn't gain or lose anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But what would you have liked Boone to do? What could have Boone done differently the last two games? Every single reliever he called on, should he bring in Bednar to keep a five-run deficit?
I think they're gassed.
Yeah.
I think they're just completely, they're just exhausted.
Yeah, I want to get to the other calls, and I'm sorry, Demetrius. And again, thank you for your service. But I just don't know what Boone... Like, I think it's laughable that any fan would have a real problem with how Aaron Boone handled the bullpen the last 2 days. I don't know what you could, what do you want him to do? In a 2-2 game, in the seventh inning, and I understand that, Warren was pitching fairly well. He was coming up to the bottom of the order that had killed him all game. The catcher was on twice. Meadows hit the 2-run home run. Sweeney had a home run robbed by Grisham earlier in the game. The bottom of the order had pounded him both times through the lineup. The bottom of the order is coming up for the third. He's already gone sixth, and he's got Cruz, Weaver, Bednar lined up in a 2-2 game. He brings in Cruz, and Cruz spits the bit. Like, I don't know what you want him to do. And then you want him to bring in Weaver to keep it a 2-run deficit or whatever, and you want to waste two of the only three arms you trust in a loss? Like, there's nothing you can do. And tonight, like, they're down. Again, he's not going to go to his top guys. He felt like part of the reason Leiter hasn't pitched well is because he's not gotten enough work. He wants to bring Leiter in. And in fairness, he gives up a base hit, but then a ground ball that absolutely should have been a double play. And then the inning gets out, and he brings in Duvall, and Duvall stinks. Like, I don't know, like, you want him to bring in Williams there? You want to bring in, like, who do you trust? He's going to go back to Cruz and not have him for tomorrow? You want to bring in Bednar to keep it a 2-3 run game? Like, it doesn't make any sense, man. There's nothing he could have done. There's plenty of reasons to get on Boone. Plenty. And certainly sticking with Volpe as long as he has, and he's probably going to go back to him here, that I have a major problem with. Volpe does not deserve to be in the lineup. But when literally every arm you bring out of the bullpen gives up runs, I really don't know what you think the manager can do. Eddie in Rockland. What's up, Eddie?
Hey, Chris. What's happening?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Did you say you bet on the Dolphins?
I did, yes.
Because why?
Because I thought that when Tua plays, that offense usually does well. They play well on turf and in domes. I thought that they would go in there. The Colts are kind of a team that's struggling with who they are. They made the quarterback switch late.
What do you mean? They showed something last year. They showed they had a defense. They had a
when the Giants and the great Drew Lock
fell
apart at the end of the year, buddy. Fell apart at the end of the year. And when Tua plays, they win.
Can you just do me a favor?
No.
Every time Daniel Jones has a good week,
yes.
Can you address him as Danny Dimes?
No. I don't think I will.
I know. But every time Dable has a terrible week, you go right back to he was the matriarch of the Buffalo
system. I kill Dable all week. I've killed him all week.
All I
talked about is that the only reason I bring up his development of Josh Allen is because when people push back on the idea he should have never been brought back. When I talk about why I wanted to bring him back, I bring that up. I didn't bring it up in any way to justify the lousy performance he gave against Washington. I killed him. I killed him all week. He had all offseason to come up with a game plan for that defense, and it looked like that. And then the play calling in the red zone was atrocious. I've been all over the guy all week. I don't know what you want from me. He had an awful week, and it better look better this week. And I don't want to go to the young quarterback and give him a break. I want him to show me why he picked Russell Wilson and show me he can go make it work with Russell Wilson. And he better. That's it for me. Everybody, take care. Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Fleas on the other side. I'll be with you tomorrow at 2 a.m. Bye-bye.
It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
I want players who want to play. I don't want players who are oft injured. I want players who give a crap. And I really feel like, you know, since, Thibodeau got here and Leon Rose got here, and I guess you could say World Wide West, that they've tried to bring in players who kind of mirrored that kind of thinking.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.